I recall one sutta, I think it's the Devadatta story, of someone who seemed to have actually accumulations that were very much in the opposite direction to the Dhamma, but was very close to enlightenment in the subsequent life. Is that right? I'm trying to understand it. One is tempted to be deterministic, to believe, okay, if you've got this kind of accumulation, you're going to hear the Dhamma. It doesn't matter even if you hear it from the Buddha, and you're going to say, it doesn't make sense, it's nonsense. If you've got some level of accumulations, you'll take some cognizance of it and you'll start to develop some interest. But could you talk about how one can change one's accumulations, or how do accumulations change? What is it that would take someone from a position of having no interest in the Dhamma to a position of having interest?
From very, very ordinary dirt, can it become diamond?
You're asking scientifically well.
But the example you have in mind was someone who
rejected the teaching
in this lifetime.
Yes.
But it was predicted that in the next lifetime he would snap out of it.
And move very rapidly towards Arahatship.
There was the case of the guy who was good at debating, who disagreed with the Buddha about Anatta. I forget his name. He became an Arahat later in Sri Lanka after he died. He had a debate with the Buddha and everyone's watching and he was sweating. And the Buddha was...
Satyanikanda? I'm not sure whether it's Satyanikanda.
Maybe. There was a yaka standing over him. He wouldn't answer the Buddha finally. And then the yaka was going to split his head and he finally answered. The commentary says, although he didn't become a Buddhist, he didn't take refuge in the Buddha, later he was reborn in Sri Lanka, became a monk and became an arahant. He was defeated in debate, but he still didn't accept the Buddha. So here's a good example.
With or without understanding.
With understanding. Mm. And of course he must have had many parami and accumulations. They weren't apparent.
While he was hearing too.
Yes, and he was making new accumulations by hearing about Anatta. He couldn't accept Anatta, that, well, he thought was laughable. That the Buddha said, well, can you control feeling to be as you like? Can you control consciousness? Can you control sanya? And he said nothing. And finally, a yaka standing over him, about to split his head, and he said, no, I cannot. So accumulations aren't always readily apparent, I guess.
It might have been that he had so much mana that he couldn't accept.
That's another thing he did. Yeah, that was another factor.
So he wasn't willing to...
Yeah, mana was a factor.
...to
big factor.
Change and follow.
Yeah, too.
I think the point is we can't judge from the present conventional situation.
Not so easy to judge, yeah. Or can we judge? Can we tell or can we not tell?
Can you tell the others, Titan?
No.
Well, the gentleman that I'm talking with on an email list, who is asking me about the baby Sotapanna, the reason he's asking is because he's wondering if he might be one. I said to him, well, the Sotapanna is supposed to be beyond doubt, so I don't think you'd be wondering about it.
A lot of people think they have attained various levels and enlightenments and jhanas, and it can be quite a hindrance or quite a handicap to actually being able to discuss dhammas. Do you find them?
Well, this guy isn't convinced. He's just wondering.
Just in case.
Yeah. Just wanting to be named Sotapanna.
He's not really sure. He had some faith in the Buddhism from an early age, even though he wasn't born in a Buddhist country, a Buddhist family. And so he wondered if this might be the unshakable confidence in the Buddha that a Sotapanna has. And if so, could he have perhaps attained stream entry in a last life? This is why he's asking these questions, you see.
If he asked, he's not.
That's what I think, too.
Have you studied Abhidhammata Sangha in Thai or Pali or English?
I have read the English translation of Bhikkhu Bodhi, but now we have to read it in Thai and memorize it in Pali.
Is it a rule or not a rule to memorize the Abhidhammata Sangha?
It is a rule if you're following the Abhidhammata, the three courts.
I see.
I heard this was the traditional system in Burma to start off by memorizing the Abhidhammata Sangha.
Perhaps it makes it easier to study the remaining of the books.
Yeah, I think it does make it easier.
What's the purpose of reciting it? Reciting any sutta, like, because there's the word in Pali, the Satyai in Thai language. I don't know the Pali term. But sometimes the monks also Satyai. But the purpose of Satyai, something which must be right purpose too. Because some Thai people now, they recite suttas, no understanding at all. Different from people in the old days. When one is reciting something, it means that one understands it clearer and clearer. When there is time to think about the word and the meaning, but not just recite without any understanding at all. So that is not the purpose of the Buddha at all, to just recite without any understanding. So there must be the purpose when there is reciting moment, because it's a kind of thinking. Instead of thinking about something else, it's the thinking about the meaning of the word that one is reciting, to have better and better understanding. But actually, it's not necessary, because the understanding is the best thing. There can be the moment of understanding without reciting, like those who develop Satipatthana.
That's what I keep telling myself too.
Are you reciting there?
Well, even if I recite Ittipiso Bhagava, the meaning, I don't really know what meaning for each word. Bhagava means one thing, arahant,
and
sama,
what's your citta at the moment when you recite?
Probably not kusala citta. I don't know.
When it's not kusala, why do you recite?
No, I said if I recite.
If I recite, mm-hmm. It's kusala citta or akusala citta?
Could be either. But something like the Ittipiso Bhagava, one learns because just one hears it so much, one doesn't set out to memorize it, but because one has heard it so many times.
With understanding or without understanding?
I think it's without understanding mostly, because you would have to know what is the meaning of Bhagava.
I think that sometimes we just imitate the other people by not knowing why and what. But actually, I think that at moment of speaking out, Ittipiso Bhagava, it's to worship, just to pay homage, to pay respect. But at this moment of talking about Dhamma, whenever there is understanding, is that not Ittipiso Bhagava?
It's also showing respect.
Yeah. And the real understanding of the meaning of Ittipiso, because there is the understanding of what he taught us. So when we think about his virtues and pay respect,
right,
it's fully respectful manner, right, too, not just reciting.
Kusala with apanya, kusala with apanya, it depends.
At this moment, even we don't use the term ittipiso, but the way we are interested to understand the truth shows that it's in our heart or in our mind, ittipiso, the moment we understand the teachings better. Or whenever Satipatthana arises, one is so very deeply respect the virtues of Buddha. Without him, how can Satipatthana arise? How can there be satta to hear Dhamma and to understand deeper and deeper? See? So all goodness comes from the understanding of his teachings better and better. All the sattas which grows from stage to stage come from his teaching. So that is Ittipiso Bhagava, not just saying Ittipiso Bhagava without any understanding. So even reciting must have some right purpose too. It's not just traditional saying.
Can there be recitation with the same idea as opening a book to read? Like we have the intention to open the book to read, okay, someone
whenever
recites.
Whenever you think of his virtues, that is the meaning of Ittipiso Bhagava.
No, I'm talking about reciting suttas, for example.
Other suttas, you mean? Yeah. What for? Is there any understanding, especially Mahasatipatthana Sutta?
That's what I'm saying, with the same intention as I open a book to try to understand.
By reciting or by considering?
Reciting, remember the sutta I recited.
Many people can recite Mahasatipatthana Sutta, no understanding at all. But the person who is aware, even there is no recitation at all, it's the right understanding.
On the other hand, one could say there can be awareness even when one's reciting by tradition.
It depends on understanding.
Or bhikkhus, it may be their custom or habit to recite, like it's our custom to go shopping. It's just part of one's daily life.
When there is no understanding, it doesn't have any meaning at all. All the words, it's like something that is one's habit.
And I think in the case of the reflection on the virtues of Buddha Dhamma Sangha, what you're saying is that even if one doesn't know the significance of every word, but still the intention is to pay respect to the triple gem, so it can
so
be...
So it depends on who's doing so. With understanding or with what levels of understanding.
Right. Because, as I understand it, each of those words, each of the epithets for the Buddha, has a whole stream of meanings that one can study about in the commentaries.
Like Jarana. Who knows about Jarana? See?
Whatever. One can't know all about it and even bring it to mind every time it's recited.
With no understanding.
Yeah, I'm saying that you cannot have all these meanings in mind.
What is better, to have understanding of each word rather than just recite? For example, iti piso, pakawa, the meaning of pakawa, arahang, samma samputo, vicha, jarana sampanno, see?
So many things.
In an environment like a Buddhist temple, where every day, at least twice a day, we'll meet and chant this together, iti piso and so on, of course there'll be some days when we're just half asleep as we chant it and not really thinking about it at all, we're just focusing on the words, not the meaning. On the other hand, there will be some days when we do, and when we recall the virtues of the Buddha, and then this leads to a lessening of the hindrances, at least sometimes it does. So can't we say, therefore, that on balance, it is a good practice, even though there will be some days when it's no good, but if we didn't have this practice of doing it daily, then we would never think about the virtues of the Buddha.
Is that the purpose of Buddha, to have people just recite?
No. But, as I understand it, the purpose is to cultivate the mind. But one recollects the virtues of the Buddha because this causes the hindrances, the five hindrances, to go down. Yes?
Without understanding the teachings, how can we cultivate anything by just reciting?
We can't if we just recite. But if we didn't make a regular practice of reciting, then there wouldn't be any times when it is skillful.
Understanding first and then recite, or recite without any understanding, on and on?
Well, I'm thinking in terms of regular reciting, making a regular practice of that, and of course working to understand too, so that there'll be more moments of skillful chanting, of skillful reciting.
Yeah, it's like in the cremation ritual. So what? At night? Kusala Dhamma, Akusala Dhamma, and Apayakata Dhamma for 20 years. And those who heard all these three words, Kusala Dhamma, Akusala Dhamma, Apayakata Dhamma, still don't have any understanding at all. What about having understanding? So whenever there is hearing or thinking about it, it conditions more and deeper understanding.
Why not do both?
What comes first?
I don't disagree with you about priorities, but I'm saying that these two things seem to me to reinforce each other.
For those who have accumulation to study and understand, they would be very interested in three words, Kusala Dhamma, Akusala Dhamma, and Abhyagata Dhamma. So they study and understand better. But for those who are very clever in reciting, just keep on reciting. No interest in studying at all. So it depends on accumulation again. But the purpose of Buddha, to teach people to understand, not to recite. Anyone would have accumulation to recite would recite, but anyone who doesn't have study and can think or recollect the Buddha's virtues. It needs not to be in words at all. The moment of paying respect can be the moment of iti piso pakawa without any word at all.
But one might still know that the most important thing is the development of understanding and yet recite still because it's the custom in the temple or
I was actually recommended to do some chanting because of my throat problems, so there may be other reasons for chanting or reciting. So just because someone chants or recites doesn't mean they're not interested in understanding.
That's why it depends on the individual's accumulation. The other might recite while the other has satipatthana.
Yes.
See?
So one can't just tell just because someone's reciting that it's...
But the better thing is to understand, not just to recite. Because usually people think that it is so very kusala to recite, they don't mind about understanding. It shouldn't be that way.
They're like, they're lazy. While they're reciting, they feel they're doing their duty without anything more.
There could be situations where that chanting in the temple, some of those monks may never ever do as you say. It may always just be repeat without understanding, but then someone else, another monk, may study and want to understand, and they would have understanding whether they chanted or not, but they could also have the chance of having understanding during the chanting, because that is their nature, to want to have understanding. So
I cannot chant metta, I cannot see, but do I have metta? Even I don't chant metta, I cannot say sape sata apaya patapata sukhi attanang. It's all mixed up and I don't know, because I couldn't arrange it. Only four lines, I cannot. Four lines. Sukhi attanang palihontu or something like that. Yeah.
But you connected the reciting to the reduction of the hindrances, I think.
Right,
and do you think that anyone who recites metta do have metta at moment of reciting?
Sometimes, sometimes not.
Do they understand what metta is? They just ask whether metta is kusala or not. See, no understanding of even metta and what metta is. But they recite, keep on reciting. They think that it's kind of kusala. By just being able to recite metta but not know what metta is, or don't have metta at all. This is another thing, so it depends on accumulation, whether it will condition later understanding or not, or just be at the same level, or with wrong understanding, that it will help that person to be or to get something, benefit. Because usually people were told to recite this, I don't know, katha or anything, and they have several katha for every purpose. To be recovered from illness, one katha, and to, I don't know, each one
different
has
things.
Different things.
Yeah.
And this shows the attachment to reciting.
To just don't know or don't understand what the katha and why do they recite. Just having lobha. We cannot tell for the others, so it depends on whether it's by a very wholesome moment without understanding, or no wholesome moment at all, only lobha, or things like that. Nobody can tell. But it's not right understanding if one doesn't know what does it mean.
Acharya, would it not be helpful to reinforce satta in chanting or in reciting?
Not panya.
Yes, but as I said, it's just a kind of reinforcement to help to encourage the motivation to
isn't
believe.
Isn't that lobha?
Otherwise, it would be very quiet in the temple if you don't have any chanting.
So that's good for the monks.
Sacred.
And some like the way it's pronounced when it's reciting. It's not ordinary way, I think. And people enjoy hearing it. And for those who have satta, can condition satta?
Yes,
we don't know at all. Some might get some benefit, but it depends on the individual. One has to be truthful to oneself.
If you go to the temple and you don't hear the bell or the sound of Buddha chanting, it's just pacha.
Ajahn, you seem to warn us always whether we're discussing meditation, or in this case reciting and chanting the suttas, or even scholarship, or whatever, if these practices are done without banya, they are an absolute waste of time. They're not really helping to develop satipatthana.
Because Buddha taught us to have banya. That's his purpose.
Did he tell us how to have banya?
Yeah. The Tipitaka.
Yes.
And the precious gem that he gave us is the outlet.
Yes.
Yeah.
The path leading out.
Of samsara.
Yes, I think it's a very useful reminder that Peter gave them, because it's so easy actually in discussion, especially for example on the email list, to forget that the purpose of discussing Dhamma with other people is for development of Panya and for no other reason. It's not for gaining knowledge, even less for showing knowledge, but just for supporting the development of awareness and understanding.
I like the comment you gave yesterday when you say that, oh, what is the way, the Tipitaka, but when you say the Tipitaka, you actually mean the understanding of reality now.
We wouldn't come to this understanding without the books.
But the book is not just ordinary book, it's his words.
And the Tipitaka is need to be explained by the right person, like Anacharya.
By anyone who can explain, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
And again, it comes down to what is the meaning of association with the wise. Association with the wise in the outward sense doesn't mean with
this
jhana,
yeah.
But it's one's own understanding, one's own consideration or reflection.
Actually, there's no one. Only the word is conditioned to be heard and studied. That's
considered
all.
Or not,
yeah.
Considered, that's
mm-hmm.
all. Otherwise we end up having a lot of attachment to a person instead of really developing our own wise reflection and understanding, no matter where we are or what we're doing or whatever our daily life is.
So don't mind who's saying, that's all. Just listen to the words.
It doesn't mean don't appreciate the good friends or the people that helped us, but in the end it all just has to come back to our own understanding.
And good friends is good or right understanding.
So one thinks less in terms of this person or that person, but more in terms of present dhammas arising.
Yes, when you talk about the danger of attachment to persons,
yes.
If it's the right person, he or she will encourage more detachment and understanding realities.
And I think that everyone knows that the right words are the words of Buddha. It doesn't belong to a particular person at all. Whatever is right is the Buddha's word. He taught the right words.
But some teachers can.
No teacher, just the words. No one, no self, nobody, only the words.